Hi everyone, I'm Justin Chisholm, welcoming you back to the Yacht Racing Podcast, where my guest this time is British Olympic medalist Hannah Mills. Hannah won silver in the women's 470 class at the London 2012 Olympics and followed that victory up with back-to-back gold medals at the Rio 2016 and Tokyo 2020 Games, making her the most successful female Olympic sailor of all time. When Mills called time on her Olympic campaigning after the last Games, she was snapped up by Sir Ben Ainslie's Great Britain Sail GP team, where she's raced in the strategist role aboard the British F50 foiling catamaran, as well as spearheading the team's initiatives around the Sail GP Women's Pathway programme and indulging her passion for sustainability with the team's Protect Our Future climate education platform they recently launched with their charity partner, the 1851 Trust. Hannah Mills, welcome to the Yacht Racing Podcast, and thanks for fitting me into your busy schedule. You've finished your career as an Olympic campaigner, but you've no shortage of stuff going on right now, sailing-wise.
Yeah, exactly. Thanks for having me. It's great to be here. It's sort of a big change for me in terms of direction and what's going on in life, but it's really, really exciting as well.
So I think I'm right in saying your main focus right now is with Ben Ainslie and the British Sail GP team. That's quite a big change from a two-person boat, being in charge of your own destiny, and now moving on to these super high-performance boats with a much bigger crew. How's that experience been for you?
Yes, it's... obviously the boats are completely different, opposite end of the spectrum, a 470 and an F50. But actually, the racing, you know, although it's shorter racing and you have boundaries and slightly different rules, sort of strategy and tactics-wise, is actually very similar. And a lot of the communication work I did with my crew, Ailey, has really set me in good stead, I think, for helping the team and to bring that strategist role to life a little bit. So it's been quite nice to see the crossovers and how applicable a lot of the stuff I've already done is. And working in a bigger team, yeah, it's a good challenge, actually. It's really cool. I really enjoy it. We've got loads of great sort of members of the squad, and everyone brings their own strengths. And I just feel like you learn loads from being around really inspirational and really good people at what they do.
Now, just give me, I think when we spoke in another interview previously, you talked about how you got involved with SailGP. And I remember being struck by you saying there aren't many opportunities for women in professional sailing beyond the Olympic circuit. And I was quite surprised by that, because you are the most successful female sailor in history with a silver and two golds. And yet you felt like that. Just talk a bit about how you got involved and what the other options might have been for you.
Yeah, well, I guess for me, timing-wise, I was really lucky that the opportunity with SailGP kind of came up the year, or my final year of Olympic sailing. So went to Bermuda this sort of a year and a bit ago to try out with the British team. And then they had a trials process at all the different events leading up to the Olympic Games. And then actually Ben told me sort of the day before the Olympic Games started that he wanted me to be a part of the team. So that was quite quite exciting, if not a bit distracting for a minute. But yeah, just feel lucky, you know, right place, right time. You know, women's sport in every different sport almost is progressing forward, which is great to see. There's still obviously loads of work to do, and in sailing there's loads of work to do on that, but I think the steps that SailGP are making and the support that Ben is giving me to build a female program around SailGP and the America's Cup is really exciting. So yeah, it feels great. But I think actually in my mind, after the Olympics, I'd sort of started trying to really line up a career outside of the sailing world within sustainability, which is my other huge passion. And so, yeah, I sort of thought I was probably stepping away a little bit. So, I just feel really lucky. The timing worked well.
So you were maybe heading for a career on the speaking circuit as a with your gold medals and talking to corporates about motivation, that sort of stuff?
A little bit of that, but more for me with sustainability, it's sort of about how you can actually influence change. And I hadn't quite got it sussed yet, but definitely working on sort of campaigns and working with businesses or with sporting events to see how we can progress and accelerate the change we need faster. But actually, through the opportunity with Ben and LGP and the British LGP team, that kind of is going hand in hand with everything the team are doing. So actually, it feels perfect for me in a way that I get to do both passions together.
All right, we'll come on to the sustainability in a little bit, but I want to take you back to your beginnings in the sport of sailing. I always like to do this with guests and just find out, you know, how they got involved in the sport. So can you give us that first sailing experiences? Who were you with? When was it? What was the boat? Where was it?
Yeah, so I was on holiday on the southwest coast of England in a place called Cornwall. With my family, I was 7 years old, and I think my mum and dad had probably had enough of at that point, my brothers, who are older than me, because they got shipped off on a week sailing course. I was too young, so I wasn't allowed to go, but I was desperate to go, being the younger sister and quite competitive. So the sailing course people let me go for an afternoon in the middle of the week and get out on, I think it was a mirror dinghy. But I remember spending most of my time being towed behind the mirror on a little surfboard, which I think at the time probably felt really fast, but looking back, it definitely wasn't fast. And then from there, I just waited a year till I was 8 and could do the course properly, and then I was completely hooked. We went back to Cardiff, where I grew up, and found a little reservoir, Clanishan Reservoir. And yeah, we just had the most amazing group of people, instructors. It was just, yeah, an amazing experience and opportunity that I just loved. So my poor parents got dragged into the world of sailing.
So your parents weren't sailors at this point, but no. It was interesting. They chose to send your brothers away to a sailing camp.
My mum had done a very small amount of sailing growing up with her brother, just sort of randomly. I mean, she didn't know what she was doing. I think she got shouted at in the front of her, but I don't think he knew what he was doing either. But but yeah, so she did know of the sport, obviously, and knew it was a great thing to do as a kid. So yeah, just again, lucky, right place, right time.
And so your time then, was it completely focused on sailing, or did you have some other sports that you were involved in as well? You said you're very competitive. And that seems to be a real trait of the people we have on the podcast.
Sure is, yeah. I mean, for my fourth birthday, I wanted a tennis lesson. I wanted to be a tennis player. I don't know why or where that came from, but I did. So I did a lot of tennis until about the age of 10, probably. I did a lot of hockey sort of between the ages of 10 and 20. Just all sports, to be honest. I just loved sport. So at school, I'd do as much as I could. But then outside of school, actually, slowly, sailing is quite time-consuming, and I just loved it. And so that became my passion.
So what classes were you sailing at the sailing club then? How did you kind of graduate up through the classes?
So at the first sailing club, Clanishan Reservoir, I just said anything they had, you know, oppies, toppers. It was a tiny reservoir, so there was nothing too big. I think we had some time in some wayfarers, just messing around. Whatever we could get in. And then, you know, once I started racing, quite quickly ended up just sailing the oppie, the Optimist class, and did that all the way through until I moved into a 420. Did that all the way through until I moved into a 470. But I guess my experiences may be different to some people that have, you know, families that sail, in that they'd sail lots of different boats at their sailing club. But I didn't do that. I just was quite single tracked with what I did, I suppose.
So it sounds like you got onto the track towards the Olympics quite early on. Can you remember when the Olympics became a thing for you? A goal?
Yeah. I remember at 8 years old watching the Athens Olympics. I didn't really know, I didn't know that sailing was in the Games at that point. So I just remember watching the athletics and watching Roger Black win his silver medal, and just thinking, oh my God, I want to go to the Olympics. At that point, I didn't care what sport, any sport would do. Yeah, just blown away by the whole thing. And so, yeah, when I think I was at an Optimist event at about the age of 11, and Ben at Ainslie did come to the event and show his silver medal that he'd won in Atlanta, it was at that point that I was like, oh my God, sailing's my sport and it's in the Olympic Games and I could try and do that too. So yeah, it was probably sort of 11 or 12-ish that became a goal and a reality for me to try and concentrate on.
It was your goal and your reality, but the real reality is that your family needs to be bought into that, doesn't it? Did you get a lot of support from your parents? I guess you must have done.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. With the sport of sailing, or any sport really, you need so much support from family to make it happen and to allow you the time to do the sport as much as you probably need to do it. So yeah, a huge amount of time invested from my family. We had a great network of families around us in Cardiff that were kind of doing similar stuff. So there'd be a lot of car sharing and everyone sort of going with one family one weekend and then another next weekend to kind of share the load. And I think that helped a lot. But yeah, it was a lot of traveling for everyone. So yeah, I do look back and I think, wow, my mum particularly put in so much time to support me.
It sounds like you were a product of the RYA system. It's pretty famous now for its successes, and it's really kind of sucks in all the talent, doesn't it, from the clubs around the country and puts them on a path towards Olympic success. Tell me a bit about that, because I've kind of seen it from afar, and I've met these families that spend their weekends trailing around the country with their children to 420 events and even 470 events. But what was life like for you back then? Was it very different than what your friends were doing?
Yeah, really different. Yeah, for sure. Like my friends were at home, going into town. I don't know, having parties and stuff on the weekends, and yeah, I was off after school at 4 o'clock on a Friday in the car to somewhere for the weekend. And but I just loved it. You know, I loved my sailing life. I loved all the friends that I was making, traveling, seeing different parts of the country, sailing in different places. It was such a privilege to be able to do that and experience that, and just get out, I guess, and see what else is going on in the country.
And were you always helming right from the beginning of your sailing career?
Yeah, I was. Yeah, I was. Still am probably a bit of a control freak in that respect. So yeah, I was always helming. But I'm very lucky to have had some really amazing crews on my journey as well.
And that's really important, isn't it? That relationship. I mean, it kind of almost goes without saying when you're spending so much time with people, even in those early days of your training, it's important you've got the right person sailing with you. What did you look for in somebody?
I mean, honestly, I wouldn't say as a female anyway, there was enough choices to necessarily look for anything. It was more who was available and who you got on with. I think for me was a big one. You know, I really wanted to get on with the person I sailed with and enjoy that journey together. So that was a big part of it. So yeah, I was just lucky that when I finished my Oppie career, I had a really good friend in Oppies called Peggy Webster, and we decided to jump in the 420 together. And yeah, we had an amazing 3 years, but Peggy was never into kind of doing the Olympic stuff. So it was always going to be then a change into the 470. And I actually sailed with a lot of different people in the 470 in the first 3 or so years of my career there, for various reasons. But yeah, there was never a lot of choice, which you know, can make it pretty challenging if there's not the right person.
Was it a very male-dominated scene in that kind of RYA youth squad? I guess it must have been.
Yeah, it is for sure. It's male dominated. There was always an allocation of females, whether they made it because they beat the boys, or whether they made it because they were the next females in the rung, varied a lot. But yeah, there was always female allocation. So there was, but there was always more guys. It was usually sort of 2-1 probably. Which for me wasn't such a big challenge because I'd grown up with two brothers and I was kind of used to it. And actually, I think it pushed me on in a way because I just wanted to beat them. I just wanted to show that I could beat anyone, no matter who they were. So I think that helped. But looking back, I think culture and bringing female talent through, I think it probably wasn't the best way of achieving that, for sure. And now, you know, the Olympic Games is 50-50 in terms of medals and split. So, you know, it's as important that we're bringing female sailors through and not losing them because it's just not the right environment for women to perform.
Yeah. And you raced in a class that was an all female class in the 470. Were you happy with that, or would you rather been in a kind of mixed class where you were racing against the guys as well?
To be honest, I don't think I gave it much thought, probably because it just was what it was. And I think whatever the challenge was that I was faced with, I probably would have just taken on regardless. So yeah, I never really thought about that. I just, you know, it was a women's class and that was the goal, was to be the best female team that I possibly could.
So as you kind of got sucked up into the vortex of this this British RYA program, and as you get nearer and nearer the top of the pyramid, the more you become an elite sailor. Can you remember making the transition kind of to, you know, wow, this is really serious now. This is full time.
Yeah, well, I guess for me, I did go to uni after school. So I went to Bristol University. And was starting my 470 career at the same time, so trying to fit that in and just kind of keep it going, I guess, till I finished university. But then with the London Olympics looming and just, yeah, enjoying my sailing so much, I actually deferred my third year of university to concentrate full-time on sailing. And I remember thinking, like, oh, I'll have so much time to, like, do all of the things that need to be done, like collect all the equipment, get it all ready. And then you actually go full time and you're like, I still feel like I'm running out of time constantly every single day because there's so much to get done and more and more and more becomes possible. So yeah, that feeling didn't really change. But I do remember that quite clearly because it felt like such a huge decision to stop my university and to go full time sailing, and such a huge gamble. And I guess I'd always been very competitive, but very sort of risk aware and always thought, you know, I need backup. With sport, you can never tell if something's going to go wrong, or you could get an injury, or anything could happen. So it felt like a huge decision, but London was just too big an opportunity to not throw everything at and try and get to.
Can you describe what a typical month was like for you in terms of training? I mean, I guess you're doing a lot of sailing.
Yeah, you are. Oh, it feels like such a lot. I mean, it is such a long time ago now, but yeah, I mean, back then it was just as much time on the water as you possibly could. You know, you've got hours to make up on the people around you that are already, you know, in the top five or whatever it is. So yeah, just pushing as hard as you can on the water, sailing with the best people you possibly can to learn as much as you possibly can, trying to build your team off the water in terms of, you know, psychology and what's required. But the thing is, I guess at that point you're so young in a way and so inexperienced that you don't necessarily know what you need and what is required. So it's sort of a find your way kind of thing. And I remember just doing a lot of racing. You know, we'd always be finding opportunities to race, because for me that's where you learn the most about yourself and your team and where you're at. So yeah, it was intense, but I absolutely loved it.
So tell me about teaming up with Saskia Clark, who you had, you know, immense success with. How did that come about?
Yeah, so I'd had a sort of bit of a rubbish couple of years. So I left university, went full-time sailing with a teammate, and then that teammate decided to ditch me and sail with a an older sailor who had more experience. So that left me a little bit in the lurch and a bit unsure as to what to do next. So I ended up sailing with various people for sort of 18 months, basically just of the mindset of, I want to go to London and I need to be 100% ready if the opportunity of the right person to sail with comes along. I can't just sit and wait. I need to be out there sailing, getting better. So that was kind of my attitude, but it was definitely a hard period of motivation and questioning and thinking, am I doing the right thing? But yeah, I kept all that up. And then sort of February 2011, Saskia stopped sailing with her teammate. And luckily for me, we went out sort of celebrating her retirement, I guess, in Weymouth. We had a good night out with a few of the sailors. And yeah, over a few drinks, I'd say, we just got chatting and we always thought we'd be too small together, because I'm quite small and she was relatively small for a crew, even though she's 5'10 or something, but she's quite light. So yeah, we didn't know if it would work, but we thought, why would we not give it a go? So yeah, we got in a boat in Palma. It was our first time sailing together in sort of end of February probably. And I think I fell out the boat straight away. I got washed out the boat. It was quite windy and wavy. And I remember thinking, oh God, she's not going to get back in a boat with me now. Look at the stay of me flapping around in the water. But she did, so I was lucky. And yeah, we just had an absolute whirlwind 18-month campaign. Well, 3 months till selection started in June. So that was hectic. And then, yeah, once we got selected in September, an absolute whirlwind to the games in the following summer.
Was it a kind of just a click and you thought, wow, this is it? Or did you have to kind of build towards that? You know, so
yeah.
You hear about peaking, don't you, at the right time? And we hear it outside of the Olympic world.
Yeah.
Was that what it was like? You had to build towards it?
No, I would say actually for Sass and I in that campaign, so our first event was Palma and we didn't do particularly well. I think we came 13th or something, which actually for me was an all right result at that point in my career. So yeah, I think we came 13th, but there were so many mistakes, as you can imagine, and so much we thought we could improve on. And I think from that event onwards, the next event was here in the south of France. I think from that event onwards, I think we medaled at every single event leading up to the London Games. So, but I would say it was through pure grit and determination and want to succeed rather than necessarily a sort of planned structure. You know, there was this sort of fierce competitiveness within us that drove those, a lot of those results. And then in sort of October time, once we got selected, we got Joe Glanfield on board to coach us. And I think at that point, we got a lot more of the kind of structure and that progression to how you actually peak for an event like the Olympic Games.
When you went into that Olympics, what aspirations did you have?
Well, I mean, I wanted to win for sure. It was a home games, but equally, I'd never been to an Olympic Games before, so I didn't quite know what to expect. We had won the world a couple of months before, and as I said, we'd medaled at every event, so I think we definitely felt confident that we could medal. And to win we always knew was going to be challenging. Like we'd won medals, but I think the worlds was potentially the only medal we'd actually the only event we'd actually won. So our track record was probably second or third in terms of results. So yeah, expectation was high, but you know, reality is you just have to focus on the process, your team. And for us and for me particularly, that games was just enjoying the experience. You know, it was such a unique thing to be a part of. We went up to the opening ceremony. We didn't start till 5 days after it, so we felt like it was a good opportunity. And that was just insane. You know, walking in with Team GB last to that stadium was just mind-blowing. And we had Ben in the team, we had Ian Percy, Andrew Simpson, Goody. It was just nuts. Like we were surrounded by these incredible sailors that had achieved so much. And so, yeah, it was such a absorb everything you possibly can, put that into your performance and give it everything you can.
That's a great way of summing it up. I hear a lot from professional sailors. They say, you know, our goal is by the end of the regatta to be in with a chance of winning on the final day. And you were, and it kind of, as I remember, it went down to the wire. You were pretty close to taking the gold and ended up with the silver. What was your instant reaction to that? Disappointment or elation?
Yeah, disappointment for sure. So we'd finished the fleet racing 2 days before the final medal race. So we'd had a day off in between and we'd already guaranteed the silver on that final day of fleet racing, just in terms of the points. So I felt like we'd already won the silver. You know, we'd had that mega elation that we've actually done it. We've got an Olympic medal. And then it was essentially a who beats who with us and the really strong Kiwi team. Yeah, it was definitely a feeling of utter disappointment. And just, I think it was a feeling for me of that could be it. You know, I might never get this opportunity to be this close to winning an Olympic gold medal. I might never go to the Olympics again. You don't know. So yeah, there was a real feeling of frustration, disappointment, like you'd let yourself, your teammates, your family, your friend, you know, everyone down. And it definitely took me quite a long time to kind of get over that feeling, which is a weird thing to say because we won a silver medal looking back. Mm. But I would still say it frustrates me. I felt like we didn't, or I didn't necessarily prepare as well as I could have done for that race. And that's probably what drove me then for the Rio campaign to change that and make sure that, as they say, no stone was left unturned.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, that's probably a valid point that you may have gone into your next Olympic Games and in a different way if you hadn't have had that disappointment. But it was a very successful Games for you. It was a gold there, and that was the end of your career with Saskia. Was that difficult? It must have been difficult to break up that little pairing.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I knew after London it was going to be difficult to get Sass to want to do Rio, but I think she felt like I did, that we had so much more to give as a team and we should give it a real shot with a real long build-up rather than the kind of hectic 18 months we have for London. So, yeah, I knew Sass was probably done, or definitely done after Rio. And so I guess that even more made me want to finish on a high and to win that gold medal together. So, yeah, I knew it was coming, but it was still a big change, you know, to not have Sass every day by my side, you know, just having the best time 99% of the time and enjoying that journey together. But I think all good partnerships need a mix up at times, and need a change. And so I think actually for me, for my progression, I think it was probably a good time for a change anyway, to kind of reinvigorate, change the dynamic, have a new challenge.
So how did you go about selecting your next partner?
Well, I didn't jump straight away at the 470. I went into an FX for a few months because I knew I wanted to carry on, but I wasn't ready yet to go back in a 470, but I wanted to learn something new. So yeah, jumped in the FX and that was an awesome experience. Absolutely loved it. They're awesome boats. They're really, really cool. Quite different, different things you need to be good at it. But then equally, obviously the racing's the racing. So yeah, really enjoyed that. And then it was probably, Probably April, 2017. I got a phone call from Ailey McIntyre, who'd been our sort of fierce rival for that Rio Olympic spot with her helm at the time, Sophie Weglin, and then been an amazing training partner for Saskia and I in that build up to Rio once we'd been selected. And so I knew how good she was. I knew, you know, a lot about Ailey, but you know, there's also a lot I didn't know. And I definitely knew that if I went in the 470 again, Ailey was the one I wanted to do it with for various reasons. So I was kind of waiting for the right time for me, and then also for Ailey, because she was still sailing with Sophie and you know, they were doing pretty well. But anyway, she stopped sailing with Sophie. And then a couple of months later rang me up and asked me, and yeah, I'd like to think I made her sweat a little bit. but yeah, it was good on her for doing it and picking up the phone. And yes, I knew I wanted to sail with her. I just still knew I wasn't quite ready to commit fully. So we did a couple of events that summer that went pretty well. And then full time started January 2018.
Was it very different sailing with somebody else?
Yeah, it was. Yeah. It was really different. You know, Ailey's amazing, but just such a different character to Sass, and had such different strengths and such different experiences. And, you know, I was really conscious that I didn't want to just copy and paste what had worked for Sass and I, because Ailey's a completely different person and our team needed completely different things. You know, some of the good stuff we brought across and some of the other stuff we didn't. And I was really conscious that for Ailey to feel ownership of our campaign and responsible for her part and our part as a team from the off. So, yeah, I think we did a reasonable job of that for sure. There's always improvements, but I think Ailey grew so much in that, 3 years in the end, 3.5 years of our campaigning together and became just the most amazing crew by the time Tokyo came around.
Now, you mentioned it was longer than you were expecting because of COVID. How difficult was that delay, a year's delay to the Olympics?
Yeah, at the time it was really difficult, 100%. For me, I always have this sort of switch on at the start or the first, January the 1st of Olympic year is like my mental, right, let's go, you know, this is it. And everything day in, day out, living, breathing is about that Olympic Games and trying to deliver that performance on the day. So I'd kind of got to March and it's exhausting for me. I find it really exhausting, that mindset to be in. And I got to March and then it was this crazy mental situation that no one could ever possibly predict. And the one thing you're always told is the Olympic Games will move for nobody. Start date is the start date. And then suddenly you're like, wait, but it has moved. So yeah, initially, mentally, it was really challenging. I just thought, my God, I'm exhausted. I don't know if I've got another year. I'd sort of planned after the Olympics to move on and you know, potentially have a baby. And so all of that became just things going around in my mind. But actually looking back, you know, once that had all passed, all those emotions, and I kind of just let myself have a few weeks to decompress and let it all settle. You know, we were lucky in a way to be in lockdown because it gave us that chance to really settle and think about things. And yeah, I mean, obviously we were going to go for another year. It was just getting your head around what that looks like and what you need to do and how you need to reset and readjust everything you'd been working on. But I actually look back and go, my God, we were so much better a year later from that extra time and what it allowed us to work on and what it allowed us to address. So I can't see us having delivered the performance we delivered in Tokyo that year before.
Wow, interesting. Was there a time when you wanted to be on the water and you couldn't be because of the confinement?
Yeah, definitely. The first couple of weeks were really hard of our lockdown because a lot of places around the world were still able to train at that point in time. So that, and the games hadn't been postponed then. So that was a bit stressful. It was just a bit like, okay, we've got a lot on here. And then also December, January, 2020, 2021, when we'd got, you know, Brexit came in and COVID was rife again in the UK. And we were kind of ahead of the curve of Europe with that. And so everything locked down. Europe shut its doors to us and we were like, oh my God, we're faced with Weymouth in January, whilst all of our main rivals were out in Lanzarote continuing on training together. So yeah, that was a difficult period, but we did, you know, we're really grateful and got a lot of support from the Spanish team and Federation, and we did eventually manage to get back out to where our kit was in Lanzarote and train with everyone again.
Wow, that must have been pretty stressful watching everybody else clocking up the hours when you're locked in the house.
Yeah.
That's difficult. In the end, of course, it all worked out famously. It must have been a strange Games. I've spoken to a few people who were there, both journalists and competitors. But you came away with the result you wanted. That gold made you the most successful female sailor ever. Was that ever a factor for you, or was that just something that came along with it?
Oh, definitely just something that came along with it. I think, you know, every games is so unique and it's so different what's required to win, and it's, you know, it's just a whole different challenge, especially when you're in a two-person boat and there's so many uncontrollables within our sport that, yeah, I just always took each game as its own entity, and you're just trying to do your best that week and hope the result comes good as to what you want it to be. So yeah, I never really had that on my mind. I knew it was a possibility at Tokyo, and obviously once we'd won and it was a realization, it was awesome. But yeah, never a sort of driver.
Okay. Now you mentioned how you moved into the Sail GP program. We talked a little bit about how different that was. And I know you brought a lot of stuff over from, you know, your experience with campaigning. You were also sailing alongside Ben, who, you know, you mentioned earlier was a bit of a kind of hero and inspiration to you. Did you have a kind of long-standing relationship with Ben?
Not massively, no. I mean, Ben was a totally different generation to me, and as you say, more of a sort of idol and inspiration, and, you know, someone who'd achieved what you aspired to achieve. So yeah, it was sort of never quite like that. So it was definitely daunting getting asked to sail with Ben and be on the boat and yeah, I mean, essentially deliver the strategy role for him. But at the same time, I had real confidence in my ability to do that and do a really good job. So yeah, it was just so cool, to be honest, to be asked to do that and to sail with Ben.
When I watch the racing and I watch you on the back of the boat, I kind of get the feeling from your body language and your movements that you are completely into the racing. I mean, it's as if you're racing your 470. I mean, you're really enjoying it, I think, aren't you?
Yeah, I mean, I'm loving it. But to be honest, I haven't been on the boat for quite a while now. But yeah, my first event racing, or my only event actually in the end racing, was the Cadiz event in October, which was just the best thing to get to do. I absolutely loved it. And I think what was amazing for me was how quickly the trust from Ben came about the communication and the information I was giving him, and yeah, you know, the decision making. It was really cool, and I was really excited about where that could progress to over the next couple of events and years. But life things and personal things get in the way sometimes. And for me, you know, I mentioned before, after the Olympics in 2020, I was thinking I'd probably have a baby, and that was obviously still something I was really, really keen to do. And timing wise, it never feels right. But as a woman, unfortunately for me anyway, you have to kind of commit the time to do that. And so, yeah, I was lucky enough to get pregnant, and yeah, we're having a baby in October,
which is fantastic news. And yeah. Does that, I mean, having a baby changes everything for anyone as a professional athlete. Is it different?
I don't know. I've not done it yet. Yeah, I mean, it's quite scary, I think, because you don't know how you're going to feel afterwards. You don't know how your body's going to be. You just there's a lot of unknowns, like anything. And it's a big change. And I know for sure it's a lot of time and energy, and it's everything. But for me, family is incredibly important, and yeah, really wanted to have my own baby. So yeah, it's definitely a big decision as an athlete because of all those unknowns. But equally, you know, there's been some inspirational athletes that have had babies and come back and been at the top of their game. And so for me, it just feels like a moment in time where I'm stepping back from active sailing, but I'm really involved with the team still. Like, I'm still going to the Sail GP events at the moment and supporting the other female athletes and trying to build a British female program to try and move on female sailing within the UK. And hopefully that'll have, you know, huge knock-on effects in other countries as well. But yeah, to try and bridge that gap between Olympic sailing and professional sailing for women. And so it actually, timing wise, it's turned out to be quite a good time to be able to take a step back from sailing and to put time into working towards that.
But let's talk about that then, because you've segued nicely into it. So what is the goal here? What is the plan to do that? Because it's obviously a very worthy thing to be doing, but how do you do it?
Yeah, it's a great question. we're really lucky that, you know, we've got SailGP with their Women's Pathway Program. We've got the America's Cup announcing a Women's and Youth America's Cup in 2024. So there's some really big, or the biggest sailing events globally that have, you know, put the time and dedication to creating those opportunities for women. And I'm lucky that I'm there at the right times to try and make an impact in that. And so, you know, our programs are focused around those two events for sure, and how we bring more female athletes into these types of roles and get the experience is part of the program that we're working on now. And you know, I've reached out to the RYA, I've been speaking with the World Sailing Trust and the Magenta Project, and you know, all these amazing organizations and people that are trying to do similar things to make sure we're all, you know, aligning and putting the resources and the thought process and, yeah, just trying to have a collective effort rather than everyone working in their own silo to achieve the same thing, essentially. So that's been really cool, and everyone's been really supportive of each other's stuff, which is great. And so hopefully we can really build some momentum. But for me, there's a few like key things that I think in the UK anyway, I can't speak for the rest of the world, where we can make a change. And a lot of that, I think, is within youth sailing and the culture and how we bring female athletes and understand female athletes and their needs so that they do continue into Olympic sailing. And then when they're in Olympic sailing, it's okay, well, how can we create a network of owners within the J70 class or the Cape 31 or whatever it is that want to have and get women on board to get that experience? Because you see so many of the younger Olympic guys, you know, laser sailors or whatever, that go off on the weekends and do professional sailing, they're getting paid. And there's just no, there isn't women that get the opportunity to do that and for various reasons. So we need to close that gap, make those opportunities available, and then get the experience in those fast foiling boats, which were SailGP in the America's Cup and hopefully some other boats we're gonna get on the program as well. So yeah, there's lots to be done, but it's a really exciting time, I think.
There's lots to be done, and you can't do it all on your own. So you definitely are going to be relying on these other organisations and other partners to help you out. Sounds like you're in the planning stages with that. The other initiative, we touched on earlier, the sustainability angle and protecting the oceans. A big move from the British SailGP team, the Protect the Future initiative, made a big impact in San Francisco, new branding on the boat. Everybody was talking about it. You're playing a huge part in that. So tell us about that.
Yeah, definitely. Well, you know, I mean, SailGP as an event and organization from the outset, you know, sustainability was a huge part of what they wanted to do. And I think sailing as a sport is such an opportunity to innovate, to bring the right partners on to change technologies, to make them more sustainable, to think about fuel and, you know, how we can do that better. And as a global event, you know, how we can travel around the world and create an event that has a much, much smaller carbon footprint than it otherwise might do, carbon and ecological footprint. So yeah, it's, you know, SailGP I've always sort of looked up to as an organization I'd like to be involved with from that point of view anyway. And then the sort of insertion of the Impact League from season two, where it was basically, you know, pitting the teams against each other in terms of sustainability and actually creating a prize pot for a charity that each team had to choose to partner with. And yeah, just creating a competition essentially out of sustainability, I think worked incredibly well. And I think the teams learned so much, but learned so much off each other, because it was, a lot of it was about sharing and collaborating as well. So, you know, that's a very important part of sustainability and the fight against climate change. So that was really, really cool. And obviously season three, the Impact League's moved on again and we've learned from last year. And so that's all changing. But for us as a British team, our our charity partner was the 1851 Trust, which is the charity Ben co-founded, I think back in 2014, which initially started out with education around STEM subjects, so science, technology, engineering, and maths, and specifically, I guess, trying to get females involved in those subjects where historically it might not feel like it's the right thing for them to do. So that program was really successful. And then, you know, a lot of research was done by the 1851 Trust around young people and climate change and how they felt about sustainability. And some pretty scary stats were coming out from young people about how worried they were, how powerless they felt. And so it really felt like there was an opportunity to try and create some educational resources around climate change and sustainability and you know, launch that platform with the SailGP team as this huge global sporting team that can spread that message around the world. So obviously, initially the education is focused in the UK, but through SailGP, we're bringing that education to all of the events and locations that we compete at. We're going into schools, they're having sessions from the Protect Our Future programme, and hopefully, you know, we can build on that and start to create a real lasting legacy at each venue that we go to with education. And for me, education is one of the biggest things that's going to solve a lot of the global problems we're facing is making sure enough or all young people have access to good education.
It feels like it's kind of too late for our generation. We've got to focus now on the younger people to get it right and fix the problem.
Well, so yeah, it's twofold, isn't it? 100%. We need to focus on the younger people, but at the same time, you know, my and your and generations in between are the decision makers at the moment. And so, actually, you know, we need them as well. We need everybody. It's an everybody problem, and it's something we all need to look at how we can not be afraid to make the change that's required, that's going to make the difference.
I said at the beginning of the podcast that, you know, you're having a busy time. I was kind of guessing that you were, but you must be just completely full time on all of these projects now.
Yeah, I am. I'm busy, definitely. But it's all amazing things. So it doesn't always feel like you are that busy because it's stuff I'm really passionate about. You know, women's sailing, women's sport, sustainability. And yeah, I've got a few other sustainability projects going on outside of SailGP as well. So yeah, it's an amazing time. And I feel really lucky to have all these opportunities. And hopefully through getting these opportunities myself, I can start to create more opportunities for more people as well.
Outside of all of this, do you get any time to just go out and enjoy being on the water?
Well, not at the moment. I'm not on the water much, which is a bit depressing. But to be honest, I got really into my wing foiling before getting pregnant. I just absolutely love it, and it's not really the right sport to be doing whilst pregnant. So that's been put aside. Obviously, the sailing in the F50 is a definite no-no. But I'm almost embarrassed to say, almost excited. I've taken up golf. Golf's my pregnancy sport.
Oh,
I know. I was like, should I mention it? But yeah, it's my pregnancy sport, I'm calling it. And I'm actually really enjoying it. So yeah, but we're lucky to live by the sea down in Poole. And so I get to watch everyone else on the water, and I do get out on the water every now and again in a slower pace of life.
Now, your baby's due in October. Are you going to be one of these mums who immediately is straight back into the action and back into the sport?
I mean, again, I would love to say yes and know that was definitely going to happen. My ambition is yes, for sure, but I'm really aware that you can't control anything to do with when you have a child, how you have a child, how that child takes to the world in its first, well, its whole life, I guess, but particularly its first few months. So yeah, I'm just conscious to make sure I do give myself and the new baby the time to enjoy those first few months. But yeah, we'll see how it all goes.
It's a very exciting time, and obviously yeah. Obviously your new child is going to be your focus for sure. Everybody will understand that. But we're all keen to see you back on the water and back racing again. It's been fantastic talking to you. today and getting some insight into all of the projects you've got going on. I wish you the best with everything, and thanks a million for taking the time to talk to me.
No worries. Thanks so much for having me.
That's it for this episode of the Yacht Racing Podcast. My thanks to Hannah Mills for spending time with me, and to all of you for listening around the world. I'll be back soon with another top name sailor interview, and until then, I'll just say, sail fast, everyone.